Shrink Wrap Radio number 375, Transforming Tragedy into Growth, with Jonathan Van Nuys.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Today's show will focus on my son, Jonathan Van Nuys, and his journey through the challenges of HIV and cancer to rejuvenation and a life devoted to service. Jonathan Van Nuys, RN, MS, NP, is a board-certified nurse practitioner who wishes to embody the values of service to nurture health and wellness, to build community, and to combat stigma and shame. He's used his own life experiences as a springboard to care for, inspire, and nurture those living with HIV and other chronic and life-threatening conditions. This past year, he fulfilled his dream of graduating with honors from the University of California, San Francisco Adult Nurse Practitioners Program with a specialty minor in HIV. He is currently working as a nurse practitioner in a challenging interdisciplinary fellowship at the San Francisco VA Hospital, where he both manages his own primary care patient panel, as well as an HIV panel and an urgent care clinic. Jonathan is also currently an infectious disease consultant specializing in bloodborne pathogens at the National Clinicians Consultation Center, where he advises medical providers from all parts of the country on testing, risk and post-exposure prophylaxis for HIV, as well as hepatitis B and C. He's also the current president of the Association of Nurses in AIDS Care, Golden Gate Chapter, and an active volunteer in the San Francisco HIV community. He's an Albert Schweitzer Fellow for Life, a fellowship dedicated to improving the health of vulnerable people now and for the future by developing a core of leaders in service, professionals skilled in creating positive change with and in our communities, our health and human service systems, and our world. For his Albert Schweitzer Fellowship Service Project, working with long-term survivors living with HIV, he was awarded a Meritorious Service Award for outstanding scholastic achievements and extensive contributions to the nursing profession. Jonathan is a longtime volunteer in the Firefly Letter Writing Program. Between the healthcare students and those struggling with cancer or other life-threatening illnesses, Jonathan can also be seen as a current spokesperson and cast member for the Greater Than AIDS campaign. He has been featured in the San Francisco Chronicle, as well as the Science of Caring Journal, the book The Firefly Project, Conversations About What It Means to Be Alive, and has appeared on the web, in film, in print, and radio promoting HIV awareness. Other volunteer work has included working with those newly diagnosed with HIV, serving on the board of Glide Health Services, working with diabetics with mental illness, and providing care at the UCSF homeless clinic. Jonathan's past work history includes bilingual HIV testing and work as a triage RN in both English and Spanish for many years at the Mission Neighborhood Health Center. Jonathan's aspiration is to live up to Albert Schweitzer's, quote, "My life is my argument." Now, here's the interview. Actually, I need to give a little preamble here to set the show up. You are about to hear an interview conducted by Matthew Zachary and Annie Goodman of the Stupid Cancer Show podcast, really that's the name, which can be found at blogtalkradio.com/stupidcancershow. On September 23rd, 2013, they interviewed my adult son, Jonathan Van Nuys, about his cancer experience as portrayed in the documentary titled Nurses, the Movie, If Florence Could See Us Now. The interview also includes the filmmaker, Kathy Douglas, RN, and oncology nurse, Lori Mathers, whose therapeutic counsel triggered Jonathan's transformational journey. Let me set up what you're about to hear just a bit more. Jonathan came down with testicular cancer, which later metastasized to his lungs. I was conducting a weekend workshop in Ireland when he called me, letting me know he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Needless to say, our whole family was alarmed by this turn of events. He moved back home with me and my wife while he underwent a very difficult regimen of chemotherapy. Unknown to us, he was carrying a secret throughout the chemotherapy and a couple of years before that. We had known he was gay, but not that he was HIV positive, which made the chemotherapy more difficult and risky. In the course of treatment, he was referred to a nurse for an hour or two of counseling, the focus of which was that he needed to let his family know about his HIV positive status. As you'll hear in the interview, that brief counseling session was a pivotal turning point in his life. I'm hoping this brief overview will whet your appetite to hear his story in his own words as it came out in the Stupid Cancer Show podcast interview, which lasts about 40 minutes. At the end of the interview, Jonathan and I will have a brief conversation reflecting on his amazing journey.
Tonight's show is going to be awesome. It's all about a film called Nurses, If Florence Could See Us Now. And it was put together by an amazing nurse, two-time breast cancer survivor, here in studio live with us, Kathy Douglas. She, on her journey to interview many, many nurses around the country unscripted, came across Lori Mathers and Jonathan Van Nuys, and they're here to tell their story tonight of this epic and amazing film, which keeps getting incredible reviews. Please welcome to the show Lori Mathers, John Van Nuys, and Kathy Douglas. Folks.
Awesome.
Well, let's just start with Kathy. We have the pleasure of speaking to you briefly in our green room before the show, otherwise known as the office across the hall, and really inspired by all of this. And I guess my first question is, what would prompt a nurse who survived cancer to start a documentary project, which I'm sure you probably invested most of your own money into, with no help from anyone, go on this masterful quest around the country to articulate and enlighten the general public to the life of nurses?
Yeah, it's an unusual question, and it's not unfamiliar, I think, to anyone who's had cancer. I think once we have cancer, we really think about what's important and how do we want to spend our time on this planet. And for me, I had gotten cancer for the second time, and I thought I'd sort of learned what I wanted to do with my life, but I also found myself kind of falling back into some old routines. And then I got cancer again, and that took me very deep into that question of how do I want to spend my time. And I felt like, you know, everybody knows kind of nursing's a very trusted profession, and a lot of people kind of have some vague idea of nurses, but they don't really think about one until they need them. And that's just kind of true in our society. We don't really think about those people that are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, taking care of people in crisis until we have a crisis of our own. And I felt like we needed to help the public understand what the work of the nurse is. You know, these are people who give a lot, who deal with really hard things every single day. And so a lot of the motivation was just to bring more awareness, especially as we're in healthcare reform. We're changing things really rapidly. And, you know, there's nobody that knows better how to take care of patients than nurses. So I also wanted to bring the attention of what nurses are doing to the community and to the policymakers to help people really get connected to this profession.
Well said. Well said. And so we're going to talk to all of our guests tonight, but I want to go to Lori, because along your journey, you had met Lori, one of the random nurses you found and accosted with a film crew, hopefully scheduled in advance. But Lori, joining us tonight, sorry you missed your flight, but we're glad you made the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm also so sorry I missed my flight, but very glad I can call in.
All right, so you're a nurse, you're doing your job, and then one day you get this call from this random person who's a nurse saying, I'm doing this film. Can you meet me for coffee in 20 minutes?
Right.
So talk us through that process.
Well, it was very exciting. It was actually after I had been back to work maybe for 3 months after I had been off for my own cancer treatment. I was off for 8 months being treated for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Came back to work in October and was awarded a Daisy Award that Jonathan had nominated me for. And Jonathan, I hadn't seen him then at that point for over 5 years, but was awarded, you know, given this award. And then a few months later, got a call from one of our administrative people at Kaiser saying that, you know, Kathy was making this film and she wanted to come film me. So she did come film me at my former place of employment. And from that point on, we decided, or she decided, that she wanted then to film Jonathan and then to film us together, because we hadn't seen each other for, you know, over 5 years. So it was really quite, I had a blast. I mean, I just felt so pride, had so much pride that I could actually articulate my own experience of being a nurse, and also having been an oncology nurse for 20 years at that point. And just to explain what it felt like to not only be an oncology nurse, but also an oncology patient.
And Jonathan, you worked in the medical field, and then you were diagnosed with cancer, and then you met Lori, and then you became a nurse. So why don't you tell us a little about your whole story, what you're doing before your diagnosis, why you decided to get into nursing, the whole story.
Okay.
You were born on?
I was born on November 8th, 1972.
On a bright sunny day.
Yeah.
Hopefully. First of all, I just want to say it's so wonderful to hear Lori's voice. Just the story that we've had together and the connection that we've had together is incredible, and it's moving just to hear you,
yeah,
even though you're not here.
Hi, Austin.
So I actually, my story started a little bit before I was diagnosed with cancer. I was diagnosed with HIV in 2004. And that was incredibly devastating for me. It was something I never expected to deal with in my life. And the stigma of that diagnosis, I really took upon myself. And it started to smother me like a heavy cloak. I was very hidden about it. I did not tell my family. I did not tell most of my friends or my coworkers because I was very ashamed. At the time, I was working for Kaiser Permanente, which is a medical group. But I was not working on the patient care side. I was working as a kind of project manager, arranging moves and ordering furniture and signs, and felt very stuck, very trapped, working 40 hours a week with this heavy diagnosis that I didn't know how to talk about. And it was 2 years later that I got a cancer diagnosis. I was diagnosed with stage 4 testicular cancer, which means it had spread to the lymph nodes in the lungs. I had to have surgery and then go through chemotherapy. And as a result, I had to move back in with my family. And they did not know at that point that I had HIV. I was told by my oncologist, you have to tell your family or you will not survive this. You will not survive carrying a secret like this. So I resolved to tell them, but then I think it was Mother's Day. That day I came home right before I got started with the chemo. It just didn't seem right. And then things got going and more confusing, and seeing the fear and the pain in my parents' eyes as they saw me get ill and lose my hair, I thought, how could I tell them that I have this other life-threatening disease? I thought it might be a slap in the face. So it was in that dark time when I was going through chemo and yet hiding half of my health stuff from my parents that I met Lori. And I think one of the other nurses came, and the whole medical team knew what I was struggling with, and they said, would you be willing to talk to Lori? And maybe I'll let Lori jump in with a piece of the story here.
Right. At that point, I was actually working in the inpatient setting and just floating over to the outpatient chemo department maybe once a month. So on this day that Jonathan came in, I was asked, you know, if I could sit and talk with him, because I have a son who's about 10 years younger than Jonathan, and they were thinking that, well, you know, the HIV thing, that maybe I would have some, you know, my son is gay, and so somehow or another they thought that there was some, you know, potential service that I could give to Jonathan and just give him a listening ear. And so I sat with him and I realized, my God, this poor young man, this beautiful soul, which he so is, and it's so obvious that he's this lovely, compassionate man, was just deeply, profoundly suffering from where he was holding his health, his beliefs about himself with his HIV. And it was very clear to me, and painful to me as a parent and as a nurse that he was holding something so secret that I knew would he just would not, his body would not be able to deal with his cancer and its treatment and then allow himself to heal with that much, you know, emotional, psychic, spiritual energy being so thwarted. And so what we did, we had just this conversation where I supported him, listened to him, told him what felt true to me, which was that, you know, his parents could possibly have a reaction when they found out that he was HIV positive. If my friend came to me and was HIV positive, I might have an initial sense of distress around that, but that it immediately would move into only wanting to help and love and support him, that it was my feeling that would be his experience with his parents, and that I very much wanted him to know that he had my love and support to make that, have that conversation happen. So how about you jump in, Jonathan, what happened for you after that?
So I did speak with Lori, and she told me that she had a gay son, and she said if he came to me and told me he was HIV positive, I might initially be upset, but ultimately I'd want to love and embrace and support him, and I know, I see your family, I see your parents want that for you. And she gave me a bracelet of wooden beads, I forgot, are they called koi beads, or...
Koa beads from Hawaii.
And she said, I'm going to infuse this bracelet with all of my love and support, and the day that you decide to tell your parents, I want you to wear this bracelet and know that you're supported and you have a whole community of people behind you. And I do want to interject that my family has always been loving and supportive. I never feared rejection by my family. It was more that I didn't want them to see me the way that I was seeing myself. I felt like I had let them down, like I had let myself down. I was just very ashamed. And after I had finished the chemo and just realized that I was stuck in this dark place and needed to do something to get out, I did decide to tell my parents one day, and I did wear that bracelet and took the support of Lori and of the team of all the people who had provided me care and loved me through that period, and that moment for me was a watershed moment. It released so much energy that I think had been pent up in beating myself up, and that energy just expanded and released outward. I decided that rather than running from my diagnosis, I wanted to turn around and fight and help other people who were struggling with the stigma of HIV, and it was that at that time that I decided I wanted to change my life. I wanted to go back to school and pursue nursing and become a nurse practitioner working in HIV. And that was very much inspired by Lori and not only the love that she showed for me in that moment, but just how she embodied the way that one person and that a nurse especially can change a life just by the act of simply listening and being present and being non-judgmental and caring.
Jonathan, what hospital were you at the time?
I was at Kaiser. I was fortunate enough to have Kaiser insurance because I was an employee. So I was at Kaiser Santa Rosa.
And you were 33.
I was 33.
And how old are you now?
40.
God bless you.
Yeah.
I'll be 40 next night. What's it feel like? I'm approaching your checkbox.
You know, it feels good. It feels great. I was terrified of 40 my whole life. I was terrified of 40 when I was like 10. And then the day that it came, I just felt very joyful and joyous and grateful. And, you know, it's only a big deal until you get there. And then it's like...
So this entire show it's all about young adults affected by cancer and what makes them unique as young adults and the age specificities that go on with that. While you were in treatment, were you ever introduced to anyone under 40?
I was not. And it was actually... It was very tough. It was a very isolating time. In a lot of ways, I felt very alone. I felt very much like I was in darkness and I didn't know who to reach out to or how to talk to anybody. I had a lot of support, but I didn't feel like anybody really understood. The other people in the chemo unit were quite a bit older. Even after I finished chemotherapy, I went to a support group, but I was the youngest one by maybe about 20 or 30 years. Really the only person I could connect with at that time was my baby niece, who at that time was less than a year old and she couldn't talk. I just hold her and I felt like somehow we had this understanding.
Right. I just wanted to bring that up because we are here raising awareness for the fact that this is an age-related issue of mental health and it's not well, it's not addressed to no one's specific fault, but now there are, and I want to get into later on in the show standards and where nursing is and where things are going through the lens of your story. I did want to take a quick break because I found this great list of the top 10 things you should never say to a nurse, and I want to see if they're all relevant to the three of you. Number one, hello, nurse. Second one is, do you only date doctors? Or, come on, it's just like on TV, right? Or, nurses, you take your orders from doctors, right? Or, nurse, what's taking so long? Or, you can hook me up with meds, right? So what does a nurse actually do around here? Or, but you're just a nurse. And finally,
why aren't you a doctor?
Why aren't you a doctor? Ding, 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 ding. All right, so let's before we get into...
You're too smart to be a nurse. Can you just be a doctor?
Yeah. Exactly. So before we get back to the serious tone of the movie, talk to us about being a nurse in the 21st century.
It's an incredible opportunity. I think nursing is such a diverse world. There are so many ways you can go, and there's so much power in it. But yes, those quotes are frustrating. And as a nurse practitioner, I work in primary care and do very much what a doctor would do. And I get that question a lot, like, are you going to go on to med school?
Right.
It's not a continuum. It's a separate profession with its own philosophy.
Right. Kathy?
Well, you know, I think that nurses are poorly understood and, frankly, poorly represented in the media. If you look at the TV shows and that, you never see a nurse who's really empowered, who's a decision maker, who's using science to manage their practice.
Right.
And so they seem a bit subservient, and that's just not reality. Reality is that nurses are highly trained professionals. They're very scientific. And they have they have a lot of work that they do. It's real challenging to be a nurse today because we're cutting back on our budgets. We're trying to cut back on our staffing, and that's a big problem. So if a nurse has too many patients to care for, they can't give the quality of care that they want to. So it's a real challenge. I mean, I think that we've got to get, and one of the reasons we made the film is to try and bring some counterbalance to this view of nurses and what they actually do.
And Laura, you were in oncology nursing before or after you were diagnosed?
Oh, I've been an oncology nurse since 1990.
Okay.
So it was really my inpatient and outpatient. So I've spent my entire career taking care of people with cancer.
So let's hear your story really quickly, but I do want to get to the kismet, the magic of this film, the denouement, so to speak,
yes,
of the just the miracle going on here. So let's hear your story.
My story since or before my diagnosis?
Well, what was your symptoms and leading up to it, and how being an oncology nurse getting diagnosed with cancer?
Well, in retrospect, as I said at one point in the film, sometimes it just makes me laugh because it seems like I should have been spared the cancer card given how much time I've spent taking care
right.
of people with cancer. So that's how I felt in the beginning. I think that I had, as everyone with cancer I've learned, has a profound reaction to having cancer. That even with having, if you have another diagnosis, it might actually, statistically be more life-threatening than any particular cancer that you might have. That just the word cancer itself, it elicits such a fear response in people that, I've noticed that all through my years of oncology nursing. And when I was diagnosed, I really was quite terrified. I had no idea how to be a cancer patient. I only knew how to be a cancer nurse. So I was in quite a bit of struggle throughout my treatment. I went into a profound depression when I was through my treatment. I did not know how to manage having had that experience. I really had no idea how to work with it. I spent a lot of time trying to act as if everything was fine. And I just went right back into my same job and ended up, really causing myself quite a bit of angst that I've now thankfully come out of and have, mined the depths of how now I move forward into my life with a type of cancer that's not considered curable. Non-Hodgkin's, the non-Hodgkin's that I have is not considered curable. So I am walking around with quite a depth of empathy for anyone else that is also dealing with cancer, because I get it. There's no secret now. And so I'm at a point now, which is such a blessing, where when I am sitting with someone with cancer, whether they're in treatment or not, I actually can meet them where they are, because I understand. You know, frequently there's not even a conversation to be had. I can just sit with them energetically, and I get it. You know, and I don't require anybody to put on a happy face or, you know, tell me positive or make a positive in what's really going on, because I get that in this society to have cancer, there is quite a push to make a positive thing. And I make people where they really are, so I can love and support them through whatever process they're going through.
And this question is for everybody. I'll start with Kathy. So what made you, besides just the getting the, you know, negative media and movie and television reputation, nurses, I know, you know, just having been through treatment myself, you know, my oncologist can't hook me up to an IV when I want to sit around and cry. She doesn't have time to listen because she has backed up appointments with other patients, and when I just want to be cranky and complain, I always complain to my nurses, the nurse practitioner, the nurse oncologist, you name it, whatever nurse I could complain to, I complain to, the ones I was in the hospital, I'm hitting up for pills, you name it, I'm not a great patient. But what made you want to do this, and how did you start from idea to what it is, to what the film is now?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, say, well, what does a nurse know about making a film? And I wanted to bring that up because I know we have a lot of young people on the show tonight. I want to tell you, you just got to get an idea and run with it. I mean, life is too short, gang, to, you know, sit around and think, oh, you know, I've got to have all the answers. So I didn't have any answers. I just kind of tackled the project. And, you know, you just have to have a passion for what you want to do and a commitment to do it. I do want to say, Zachary, there was an amazing group of people who rallied together to make this happen. It started as an idea, and as you talk to people, you find like-minded people who want to share, you know, who want to get that same kind of idea out. And so, you know, this organization on nursing excellence, you know, brought great support.
You founded that. It's yours, right?
I founded that organization. I was one of the founders of the organization. There was a whole group of us, actually. And we started the organization because we were worried about nurse staffing. Look, if you're going to have enough time to sit and talk to Jonathan so that you can inspire him to talk to his parents, to heal, and then change his life and become a nurse and help others, that doesn't happen if you're so busy that all you can do is hand out your pills, change your IVs, and run to the next room. So,
right. So
it's really about, if we can understand how important this work is, then more stories like Jonathan and Lori's can happen.
So where's the line then? With all due respect to the amount of time it takes to become a nurse, to maintain being a nurse, to sustain the literacy that you require on a day-to-day basis, where do you have time to be a therapist?
You know, I don't think it's being a therapist. I think that there's other professionals who are quite good at that. But the ability to be able to sit down in a room and listen to somebody for a few minutes, Lori didn't give a bunch of advice. She listened. And you know something, if we're staffing our nurses so tight and we're giving them so many patients that they can't sit down at the bedside and listen to a family member or listen to a patient, then we're not living our truth. We're not living who we are, why we came into the profession in the first place. So we just have to really advocate for that, and we have to help our hospital administrators and our CFOs and finance people understand that that's part of the healing process. That's what's going to help keep people healthy and out of the hospital.
But psychosocial wellness is a new concept. It's not a new idea, but it's a new concept in billables and codes and back pay and reimbursables. And you guys have actually kind of been very influential in getting that to become something out of the nebulous ether that it wasn't even 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, just may not be nursing thing, but just to something as simple as acupuncture being right. covered by insurance now.
It's not wonderful.
That's a huge
wonderful.
Thing.
You
know, I'll wait till, you know, Reiki is covered by insurance or massage therapy. You know, you shouldn't have to have an IEP for a PT to you know, you should be able to have it covered.
You know, it's coming. My brother, who recently passed away from cancer, was in the hospital. And, you know, he could actually have an acupuncturist 3 times a week during his hospital stay. I mean, we are making progress, I guess
right.
is my point.
So I want to come full circle to the Kismet factor of all of this, which is, Jonathan, you were diagnosed 7 years ago with stage four testicular cancer, and then you had this amazing koi bracelet, right? Is that pronouncing that right?
It's Koa
Bees,
K-O-A.
Okay.
That
Lori gave you as a gift of energy and healing and community. And then several years later, Lori was diagnosed with cancer. And tell us what happened.
Yeah, so I had that bracelet by my bedside for a long time. It meant a lot to me. And in the meantime, I had gone through my prerequisites for nursing school, applied to UCSF, which is a very prestigious program, had just finished my nursing degree, and had not gone back to thank Lori. I had never seen her again. She never knew what had become of me. And really the reason I hadn't gone back was out of fear. I was afraid of the smells of the chemotherapy. I was afraid maybe Lori wouldn't remember me. Maybe the people there wouldn't remember me. But as time went on, I thought, it's not about me. I really need to go back and say thank you. This person changed my life and means so much to me. So I went back. I brought the bracelet, and Lori wasn't there. Unfortunately, she was out with her own chemo treatment. So I borrowed some post-it notes and wrote my whole story of what I had done in the past 5 years, I think it was, on a, I don't know, 15 post-it notes in my messy handwriting, and left that with the bracelet for Lori. And I think it was close to a year later, months later, when I heard back from her that she had come back to work and received this trophy. I also, on my way out, I saw a poster for a nominated nurse for a Nursing in Excellence Award, and I thought, who better? So I wrote out the story again, and it turned out Lori won that award. She won a trophy, and that's how Kathy discovered her.
Well, that's quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
Lori, can you talk us through the emotional moment when you realized that Jonathan had left the same bracelet for you that you gave to him?
Well, it gives me goosebumps and makes me want to cry just thinking about it. And, you know, again, and I think the wonder of the whole thing for me was I only took care of Jonathan that one day. I sat with him for however long it took to give him his chemo, you know, 2 or 3 hours or so, and we had our conversation. And then I did not know what became of him, because that wasn't my regular place of employment anymore. I was doing inpatient, and that was in the outpatient unit. So over the next 5 years before we reconnected, I thought of him many times, and when I thought of him, it was with this sense of, oh boy, I had this little pang, because I was fairly frank with him. And basically what I said was, if my son came to me and told me he was HIV positive, I might be pissed. I might want to kick his, you know what, you know, but then that would immediately move into love and support. But over the years, I thought, oh, my God, I can't believe I said that to that poor guy. I hope it was okay. I worried about him. And so I really didn't know what happened. So when I got that letter and my bracelet, I was just so thrilled and thought it was just truly extraordinary that it really, not just about, me per se, but how we as human beings connect and can affect other people and never know it. You never, ever know how your kindness or your compassion or the extra 30 seconds that you spend being kind to the checker at Whole Foods might completely change their life in ways that, you know, I feel very fortunate that Jonathan came back and let me know. But what it really imprinted on me was the power that we have to help and support each other by being kind, really, by being kind and being non-judgmental. I think that's the true beauty of this story, is it that interaction did change Jonathan's life, and he went on and now is in a very powerful position where he has already touched many, many hundreds of lives and will continue to do that as a nurse practitioner, you know, throughout his career and his life. And that might not have happened had we not had our conversation, which is really incredible.
Yeah, Lori, you'd be surprised. I mean, I want my main nurse practitioner and the other nurse in the office where I was getting chemotherapy, we spent a lot of quality time together and we became very close. And one of the aspects, and I'll ask all of you, but I'll start with you, Lori, first, is I always wonder as a patient how nurses feel. And I know that when I went through treatment, one of my biggest, you know, gripes, which I know that Jonathan felt the same way, was, you know, I was 30, 33. We both felt very young going through treatment. And it was very difficult because I would have, like, older ladies make a lot of comments to me about my age, and I would get very frustrated. And I know how old I am. I know how young I look. I don't need you to point it out to me. I am aware. And my nurse, I would sometimes go into chemotherapy and I would cry and be sad about what was going on. And she would always talk about how it bothered her that it wasn't fair, that this is happening to me. And I always wondered what it's like for a nurse to treat somebody, someone who you deal with regularly and you grow a relationship with. How do you... It's hard for me to understand what it's like for nurses when they go home at night and have to think about all these patients who they have, who they see all the time, and some of them, you know, there might be someone like me who comes in for a period for chemotherapy, or there might be someone who has a terminal diagnosis and might eventually pass away. So for nurses, how do you deal with that, and how do you deal with the making connections with these patients? Let me start with you, Laura.
Well, that's a really great question. Are you starting with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really great, really sweet question, and I thank you for asking, because it makes me, how nurses feel obviously is dependent on the individual nurse that you have, but oncology nurses make a choice to be working with a population that we know people with cancer die. We know that's going to happen. It doesn't happen to everybody. I mean, and many more people go on to live very long, productive lives after they've had treatment. But people with cancer do, you know, they do face a very scary diagnosis, difficult treatment, and possibly, you know, a very shortened life. And so oncology nurses are aware of that. And what I want people to know is that, you know, we really come from the heart. Nurses come from the heart. Good nurses come from the heart. They feel you. There's a deep intuitive sense that happens between nurses and patients. It's where we feel you and we love you. You know, we definitely love our patients. There's not a way not to love our patients. You know, and I sat with Jonathan and I looked at him and he was so vulnerable and he was bald and, you know, so young. My heart clenched.
Ooh, we're losing you a little bit.
Yeah, I think we lost you, Lori.
Okay, well, we'll go on to Jonathan to pick up where she left off. Just for you personally, especially having gone through everything that you have gone through.
Yeah, I think it's very different for me because I came in after having been a patient in some very profound ways. And I want to read a quote that was very instrumental to me in starting my career. And it goes, "Any of the stuff of our lives, our joys, our failures, our loves, our losses, even our sicknesses, can become the stuff of service. I have seen people use anything to bless life. There is such a simple greatness in us all that nothing need be wasted." And that's by Rachel Naomi Raymond. And that captures the philosophy with which I try to live my life and my career. And I think when I see a patient, I bring all of my own health experiences, all of my experiences with me in the room. And whether I verbalize that or not, and I usually don't because I don't want to make it about me, I feel like that's in the room and it's just there. I that dividing line between sickness and health is so thin. It's like a gossamer line. Anybody can pass over at any time, and I retain that awareness. And I feel like when you hear people's stories and when you hear what they walk with, I can't help but fall in love with them in some way. And I just want to be that person who listens and who gives them my full attention. So I think for me, it's just a profound river of empathy that is just naturally there.
You know, in the movie, one of the nurses says, you know, I remember the very first child I ever took care of who drowned in a irrigation ditch. I think that every patient we take care of becomes a part of us. And, you know, sometimes you run into nurses who are a little cold. And I think that's because their heart just can't take anymore. It's really hard work. And I think it builds up. Nobody enters nursing wanting to be insensitive. But you do run into it sometimes. And I know every one of you, if you've been in healthcare, can run into that. And all I would say to you is try to have some compassion back. Because these are people who don't deal with a crisis once in a while. They deal with it every single day as part of their career. And it's hard. It's very hard work. But, you know, I can't think of a patient I've ever taken care of who's not somehow a part of my being. They become a part of us.
Lori, are you back? We lost you for a second there.
Yeah, I'm back. I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, some British lady said goodbye, and I was gone.
That's the queen. Yeah.
That was the queen.
We hear those voices, too.
Yeah.
What British lady? Exactly. All right, we have just a few minutes left, and this has been a really compelling show. We haven't done a show directly on just nursing in a long time, but we do interface with nurses all the time, whether it's the Oncology Nursing Society or the Pediatric Oncology APON or... Actually, one of our board members is the founder and chairman of the National Coalition of Oncology Nurse Navigators, Sharon Franz. So we take nursing incredibly seriously, and we believe that nurses are the gateways to change for cancer survivorship, and that we're not here to change physician behavior. We're here to augment the relationship physicians have with their understanding of their practice, and that nurses are the catalyst for that. Social workers, too, fit right in there, and it's really this team approach. I would ask the three of you to each spend a minute or so. What does the world need to know and need to do to improve the lives of the effectiveness of nurses in this country? Start with Lori.
Of the what of nurses in
the effectiveness.
Country? I didn't get that last. Oh, the effectiveness. Just to recognize that nurses are essential to your care and to support whatever legislation is happening to improve nursing. For example, in California, the nurse ratio law that we have, that is now, you know, rolling out throughout the country. There's a lot of work getting, you know, with unions and all of that to get that nurse ratio in each state legislature. That's a huge thing. So to support that, to support the work of nurses.
Jonathan?
I think it takes being a team at this point. I actually work on an interdisciplinary team at the VA right now with nurse practitioners, nurses, LVNs, and MDs, and some wonderful MDs who are also mentors to me. And I think it's all realizing that we're part of a team there for the patient, that we're all here for the patient. And the idea of a lot of places now have 15-minute patient appointments, and you cannot make someone feel respected and heard, or it's very difficult, in 15 minutes. It's like the fast food of patient care. So I think really expanding that time that providers, no matter what their role be, have with patients and working together as a team and just facilitating listening to people and their stories. And
so you're not a McNurse.
I am not a McNurse. No.
Kathy, take us through in your comments. You had mentioned legislative change as part of what Americans can be aware of. Are there any bills out there, anything going through the House or the Senate, any papers being written up to improve the back end of things from the government side for nurses in this country?
You know, there's a lot going on in the legislation, both state and national. I think, though, in my personal opinion, is that we want to empower nurses to be able to do their work. And they know what they need. We've just got to get that voice stronger. And we've got to get our hospital administrators and our healthcare leaders listening to that voice. When you look at healthcare reform that's going on in this country, you know, nursing's not at the table as largely as they should be. The physicians are right there, but they don't understand the 24-hour-a-day care that the nurses do. So I think supporting, you know, nursing organizations and supporting nursing really getting out there. The other thing that I wanted to say is when you think about what nurses need, you know, Jonathan is one of the rare people that went back 5 years later and told Lori what happened. We don't hear what happens. I can't tell you how many hundreds and hundreds of patients that we've all cared for, and we never know what happens because they're discharged or they're gone, and we never know.
Are you allowed as nurses to give them your personal contact information? What mechanism could a patient, I mean, I'm all for this, but talk me through a solution.
So Jonathan just sought out Lori. He went back to the place where the care was given, and they were able to pass that information on. You can't really give out your...
Right.
Some people do it, but
right.
I can't really advocate for that. But, you know, write a letter. Sit down and write a note and send it to the hospital. Send it to the hospital administrator. Make sure those guys know how much we appreciate, how much patients appreciate the work the nurses are doing. And if you run into a nurse in your community, as a neighbor, as a friend, just pause and say, thank you for the work you do. Thank you. Because if nurses weren't doing it, imagine what life would be.
Right.
They're really the glue that holds this whole thing together. And so just, you know, I would just say, reach out and say thank you.
Well, the film is Nurses, If Florence Could See Us Now. I assume a reference to Florence Nightingale.
Absolutely.
So what would Florence say if she could see you now?
Well, you know, Florence Nightingale is considered kind of the mother of modern nursing. So before that, it was kind of the military or the churches or families who really took care of people in need. And Florence put science behind it, and she was a real kind of advocate for nursing. And I think if she looked at us now, she'd be very proud. She'd be proud of how scientific nursing has become. She'd be proud of the researchers, many, many nurses with PhDs. So we've got all of that going really well for us. I think, a lot of people answer this question in the film, so I hope some of you reach out and actually watch the film. You know, there's a lot of people who said, she would tell us to keep going. You know, we haven't solved all the problems. We're there. We're fighting the battles every day. But there's a lot more to learn. There's a lot more research that needs to be done. There's a lot of areas, you know, you even mentioned earlier areas where we're not focusing our research. So I just think that she would say, you know, keep doing this work, but don't rest. There's too much to do. There's too many patients who need our help.
So how can our listeners get the movie?
Okay, well, this is really exciting because as a fairly new filmmaker, this is only my second film, it's really hard for a film to get picked up by distributors. But this film did get picked up right here in New York, First Run Features, one of the largest independent film distributors in the United States.
Congratulations.
Picked up our film. I think last month we were the highest selling film for First Run Features.
Wow.
So we're doing really well there. Thanks to them, you can rent it on iTunes for, I think, like $1.99. So if you don't have any money, that's a great way to see it. You can order it on iTunes. You can go to the On Nursing Excellence website.
It's on Amazon, too, right?
It's on Amazon. It's actually in Barnes & Noble. I mean, if you Google it, I did that like about a month ago. It's in, I think, you know, 50 different distribution channels. So whatever your favorite place to purchase films is. I want people to know that when you purchase that film, this is a nonprofit that this money goes to, and that helps further this work of this group of nurses that are trying to really make a difference. So it's kind of, we think of it as a donation in a way. So thank you so much. You know, if you rent it or you purchase it, it really helps the work go forward.
Well, this, you know, we got off to a rocky start, but this was this is one of our best shows.
Absolutely.
This is really, really compelling, really emotional. And it's exciting. I remember my nurses, Andy mentioned her nurses. They were the glue. They really were the glue. I mean, I had great care, but I too went isolated. I was, you know, diagnosed during Clinton, so there was nothing in the world of wellness. It was just like cut and dry, get you out of there, meat factory mentality. I don't fault 1996 for being 1996, but you know, the whole reason I started this organization 10 years later to the date was because, you know, it's not okay that I went alone. And it's not fair that even, you know, even 7 years ago you went alone. People go alone today still. So I would believe Florence would say, what I always say is, you know, we've come so far, but behind every door of success are 10 more of challenge. And we have to pursue and do our best and make the most. So you guys have been really awesome. Any final thoughts, Annie?
I have to say, I love nurses. They are the ones, I have a lot of friends from college who are nurses, and they're the ones who I would hit up at all hours of the night, texting, calling, giving them my laundry list of side effects from chemotherapy, and I haven't gone to the bathroom in about 12 days. What do I do? They were the ones who answered the call, answered the text. It didn't matter if they were in oncology, if they were, you know, one of my best friends is a nurse, and she's done a little bit of everything. She hasn't done oncology because, as you all know, oncology is difficult, and it's just not for her. But she, you know, looked into a lot of what I was dealing with and drugs, and she was very, very helpful. But my nurses were the ones who gave me their cell phone numbers and their email addresses, and it was, I just passed out with my friends. Do I need to go to the hospital? She responded in 15 minutes. So I knew it was a weekend, and I knew what to do. And even, you know, my mini meltdowns 6 months or whatever, not even 6 months past treatment, but just my mini meltdowns of help. And I wasn't even, you know, their active roster of chemotherapy patients, but I just was having a meltdown and on a weekend and needed to talk to somebody. And I didn't want to bother my oncologist because I was like, she's not going to, I don't know if she's going to respond on a Sunday. And she called me, and nurses are very helpful. They're the best with veins. They know how to put in a good IV.
They do.
They know which veins to leave alone. Even almost a year after chemotherapy, I had two main nurses. One of them knows, don't go near that one. It's seen about 100 wards, but you guys do very important work, and you guys are. You might not think you're a therapist, but you are. And even when you tell us that we need therapists, that's you being a therapist. So,
well said, Annie. Yeah. Well said, well said. Well, once again, you made the trip, first of all. That's a schlep. You can be a trip. Thanks for coming out to New York. Enjoy yourself while you're here. We'll give you tourist tips after the show. Lori, I hope you are you planning on still coming? Because we'd love to see you if you're in town.
I'm not able to come. I'm actually dealing with my mother, who's really sick, and I'm sitting in the parking lot of the hospital now as we're on the phone.
Okay, so, well, we won't take up much more of your time. You have to go be a caregiver, go be a nurse.
Fine, though. I would love to come.
Yes. Well, thank you guys so much for the film. Once again, there's Nurses, If Florence can see us now on iTunes, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, you name it. You can find that anywhere. Thank you, guys. Lori Mathers, Jonathan Van Nuys, and Kathy Douglas. You guys kick ass. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I have Jonathan here with me now. Jonathan, welcome to the Shrink Wrap Radio studio.
Oh, I'm so honored to be on the show.
Yeah.
You know I'm a fan, and I'm honored that you're proud of me to want to feature me.
We have a mutual admiration society going here for sure, and I wanted to get you on the show live before sending this out into the wild. We heard your interview on that other podcast, but I really want people to get a sense of your voice here. And so we've heard your story. To summarize a bit, what's your big takeaway from your confrontation with life-threatening illness?
Well, first of all, I want to say I would not wish life-threatening illness upon anyone.
Yeah.
It's not a desired vehicle for growth. But I've been lucky enough to be able to use what I thought was the worst thing that happened to me into a springboard, into a new and meaningful life. And so I think my takeaway is resiliency and gratitude, that sometimes when you're struggling through the darkness, you can find these moments of light. You can rediscover how much love and support you have in your life, how many people want to be there to hold you, and use those struggles to find a way to give back and to really take the time to be grateful for life. I want to say the year after my struggle with chemotherapy and illness, which was 2007, when I started regaining my health, that feeling of losing your health and then having it come back when you weren't sure that it would was so joyous. I remember you took me to Hawaii that year as I was just recovering, and I felt so happy and joyous. The stars were sparkling, and just to breathe and walk and be alive. And for a year, I was really glowing with that awareness. And I do want to say it's difficult to retain that awareness in your everyday life as stress hits you. But I try to reconnect with that as often as possible, and I do think it still lives inside me.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that trip to Hawaii. I'd kind of forgotten about it, but I remember, I think we saw fire dancers, and there was this kind of impromptu gathering on the beach that somebody took us to, and I remember that you and I had a special moment, a conversation about, okay, let's imprint this on our brains. Fortunately, you did it for yours.
I remember it well. For me, it was a relaunching into life. That's the moment I remember of really feeling like I was reengaging with life. My health was returning. We got to go with my sister and her husband and my niece, who was quite young at the time, and who really was also a presence that helped me through that dark time.
Okay. Now, maybe you've already touched on this a little bit, but what do you want to say to listeners who might be struggling with serious illness themselves?
Again, I want to express my empathy for anybody going through that. It's quite difficult, and I don't want to minimize it in any way, but find what support is out there for you, whether it be your family, whether it be your friends, whether it be in your healthcare providers or your neighbor. I think there are a lot of people that surround us that want to give love and sustenance and life, and to really find those moments of light that pull you through the darkness. For me, there were different writings that helped me through, like Rachel Naomi Raymond for one, Thich Nhat Hanh. Another thing that really helped me through was my eldest niece, Ella, who at the time was my first niece, and she was a baby, less than a year old, who couldn't talk. And I was having such difficulty articulating that what I was going through, that it was really a connection to life and an anchor, just holding that baby who didn't need me to talk, who just was pure love and expression. So finding whatever those things are for you to anchor you and to pull you through and to give you some sort of meaning and hope, because there is hope, and I hope that I'm an embodiment of that. Again, would not wish cancer on anyone, but for myself, being lucky enough to have survived it, I'm actually glad that it happened to me, because it gave my life a new direction and meaning, and I could not have kept going in the vein that I had been going previously. It really helped me find truth and openness.
Yeah. Well, you talk about the cancer. What about the HIV part? Because I think many people would find that so overwhelming. You know, how's that working out for you?
It was so overwhelming. And I'd say cancer is, in a lot of ways, a very socially acceptable disease, where HIV is not. And that was tough for me at the time, because I was really hiding that secret. And for me, finding the courage and the support to be open about that has been life transforming. And now it's become my focus for my career and my life, helping others struggling with HIV, helping others who are struggling with that stigma and shame. It's been such a journey for me. When I think back to that time when I was hiding my pill bottles and hiding the secret, I felt very closed down and almost monstrous and twisted inside, just to be so hidden. And when you have no secrets and you're open, it was just such a relief and such a burst of energy. And now my whole life has been transformed. Now I'm working with people on their journey with HIV, and I'm a spokesperson against stigma, working now with the Greater Than AIDS campaign. And I'm on a billboard speaking out against stigma.
Yes, you are. Talk about being courageous. You're really out there. I wish I had a picture of it to maybe put on the site, but I want listeners to know that he's on a huge billboard.
Yeah, so it's been quite a journey, literally. And I'm just grateful for every part and for all the support that I've received on that journey, because I think no one gets through illness or really anything alone. We need community, we need family, we need love, we need support. And I think I encourage people to seek that out in whatever form that they can.
Well, Jonathan, I feel privileged to be your father and to be a witness of this journey. And it was difficult, much more difficult for you than for me, but difficult for me too. And so I'm really glad to be able to share you with my Shrink Wrap Radio audience out there, and also really appreciate that you are a big listener of the show, more than anybody else in the family. So.
I am. I love the show. I always learn so much from it. I'm honored to be on the show, and I'm, of course, very grateful to have you as my father. I really see my family as the ground of my being and support, and I could not have made it to this point without the support of my family. So I'm so grateful for that.
Well, that's a great place for us to wrap it up. I'll use my usual clothes. Jonathan Van Nuys, thanks for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Pleasure's all mine. I'm honored.
Don't let the podcast well run dry. Keep these outstanding podcasts coming and support Dr. Dave by going to the website and clicking on the big green donate button. If we can all remember to make a donation, it will mean the difference between always having new and captivating interviews to listen to or not. Donate as much as you like, and in that way, Dr. Dave will be able to continue on his journey to educate, entertain, nurture, and inspire.
Thanks, Sherry, my sister and Jonathan's aunt, for that call to action. I thought it would be particularly appropriate to play that and make this a Van Nuys-centric family show. Let me give another plug for the film that features Jonathan's story. The name of the film, again, is Nurses, If Florence Could See Us Now. And, of course, that's a reference to Florence Nightingale. The title makes it sound kind of boring. I was willing to watch it because my son was in it. Actually, I found myself engrossed in the whole thing well before Jonathan's part, which comes near the end. Nursing is a far more diverse and activist profession than I had realized. Jonathan's going through the RN and then the nurse practitioner program has also given me insight into the profession. Having been to two of his graduations, I've been impressed by how warm and loving the faculty are. I have to say, this profession seems to embody the qualities that I associate with the humanistic psychology movement. I think, in part, that's because Carl Rogers taught in a nursing school or two for part of his career, and I think he had a big impact. Back to the film. It's not a boring documentary, and I think you'd enjoy it, even if you don't have a son in it. And no, I don't get any kickbacks for promoting it here. You can add it to your save list on Netflix, or you can buy it new on Amazon for about $17 US. I had a good experience last week talking about Shrink Wrap Radio and answering student questions in Dr. Myrtle Heary's Psychology Careers class at Sonoma State University. You might recall that Dr. Heary was my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio number 115 way back in 2007, speaking about existential humanistic psychotherapy and education. It's a good one if you missed it. She invites me to her class each semester, and she assigns students to listen to two Shrink Wrap Radio episodes of their choosing and then write a one-page response paper. She then hands me a copy of all the student response papers when I come to give my guest presentation. I so appreciate Dr. Heary's consistent support by exposing students to this abundant and relevant content, both the audios and the transcripts. If any of you are teachers of high school or above, you might consider following suit. Speaking of transcripts, we now have number 372, Exploring Holotropic Breathwork with Jungian analyst Monica Wickman, thanks to the speedy and indefatigable efforts of Gloria Ullman. Okay, let's cut right to listening to some recent emails from our listener community. First, we hear from Gloria Ullman, who writes, I listened again recently to the interview with Matt Atkinson on resurrection after rape. As someone who had posted a comment on it on the Shrink Wrap Radio website, it was just phenomenal. I remember listening to it before, but I was in a totally different mental space at that time, and it made me realize just how far I've come. My interactions with you and the podcast and doing the transcripts have played no small part. I also re-listened to James Hollis as a refresher because I signed up through your newsletter for the teleconference that the Jung platform is hosting with him. It started today, and in spite of a few technical hitches, it's just great. We had a talk recently at the Jung Society in which the speaker referenced him extensively, and it's just amazing to me that I have the opportunity to interact with him via this worldwide web of connectivity. If there's anything to reincarnation, I think I'm being primed to be a Jungian analyst. I think you'll have to tag Shrink Wrap Radio as the podcast with the personal touch. Regards, Gloria. Gloria, I'm so glad that this podcast is opening doors for you into Jungiana and that you are experiencing it as the podcast with the personal touch. And I'll do my best to keep it that way. And here's one more from Jason, who writes, Hello, David. I'm an avid listener to Shrink Wrap Radio, and I thought you'd appreciate what I'm observing as a series of synchronicities pointing me toward attending Stan Groff's workshop on holotropic breathwork here in Seattle this coming weekend. About 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks ago, I was doing some house cleaning and listening to your interview with Monica Wickman on alchemy. In that interview, there's a funny moment when you misinterpret Groff for goth when Monica mentions the work she's doing in the Groff community. I've listened to this interview before, and I'm tickled again by this funny play on words and misinterpretation. Just the next day or a few days later, I'm at the yoga center with my wife for our regular Tuesday yoga. I'm in the bathroom, and there's a bulletin board with a myriad of business cards and flyers posted all over it. One catches my eye. It has the name Stanislav Grof on it. I think, hey, I know that name. It's a flyer for a holotropic breathwork workshop coming up on October 18th with Stan. The coincidence slash synchronicity strikes me immediately. Now the seed is planted in my mind that this synchronicity is an indicator that I'm to attend this workshop. I mention it to my wife, and she's not that intrigued by it. Nonetheless, this stays in my mind. Just last Thursday, I go to mow the lawn, and I'm looking for something on Shrink Wrap Radio I can listen to, perhaps more on alchemy or an interview with Monica. I forget exactly what words I used to search the site with, but up comes Exploring Holotropic Breathwork with Monica Wickman. I'm a little confused how I hadn't seen this interview in your archives before. Oh, I should mention that I also searched all through your website for your interview with Stan Groff that I heard some long time ago, but to my avail, I could not find it. Through your informative interview with Monica, which further prompted me to consider attending the Groff workshop, you mentioned that the Stan Groff interview, which is actually on the Wise Counsel podcast. Aha, that's why I couldn't find it. So I then go to your interview with Stan and re-listen to that. At this point, I'm re-inspired about attending the workshop. The next day, I type up an email to my wife and attach informational links on Stan's work and the workshop. I suggest to her that we attend together and share the experience. Well, that weekend, a depth psychologically oriented friend of mine comes for a visit from Malibu. We have a lovely weekend, and during the breakfast on Sunday morning, Stan's workshop comes into the conversation. I can't exactly remember why at this time. My friend, Wendy, shares with us that she has attended one of those workshops. She then goes on to give her perspective on the experience, and she provides a high endorsement of attending this upcoming one with Stan. Well, that must have been the confirmation my wife needed, which I'll add that it was unsolicited, because my wife agreed to attend the workshop with me. We are now paid and signed up to attend. So what does all this mean? I don't know exactly. I hold myself back from getting too wrapped up in the excitement of such coincidental events, meaning I resist jumping to any conclusion that attending this workshop will have life-altering effects. However, I can't deny the interesting pointers that led me to discover the workshop, then continue to explore the topic, and then my friend's positive endorsement of the workshop that seems to have swayed my wife to attend with me. Without her opting to attend with me, I probably would have chosen to not attend the workshop. I'm working on my dissertation, and I'm feeling quite guilty about having not spent much time on it in the past couple of months. Well, there it is. It'll be interesting to see what the workshop brings forth for my wife and me. All the best, Jason. Well, Jason, the date has come and gone, and I'll need a report as to whether you two ended up going or not, and whether it was, in fact, life-changing. And certainly, if nothing else, it shows that synchronicity is still alive and well. So I think that better wrap it up for today. As always, send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. In addition to email, you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-350-9918. Thanks to today's guest, Jonathan Van Nuys, for sharing his journey, and to the Stupid Cancer Podcast for allowing us to use their interview with him. On the next episode, I'll be speaking with noted psychodynamic psychotherapist and author, Dr. Nancy McWilliams. We'll be speaking about understanding personality structure and its role in psychoanalytic diagnosis. All you depth-oriented fans are going to appreciate what she has to offer. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.